Welcome to NextUS 818 Podcast, a reflective platform for connecting past successes with future progress in the African-American community. I'm your host, Dr. JC. The inaugural season of NextUS 818 Podcast focuses on the 6888 Central Postal Directorate Battalion, the only all-African-American, all-female battalion to serve in the European Theater of Operations during World War II. If you're tuning into the podcast for the very first time, I encourage you to check out the inaugural episode from September the 7th of 2022 to learn about the background of the 6888 Battalion. In episode 18, I will share some exciting news about three recent honors to the 6888 Battalion. The first is the redesignation of Fort Lee to Fort Gregg Adams. The second is the passage of a resolution in Delaware honoring the 6888. And third is the proclamation of March the 9th as 6888 Day in Maryland. Thursday, April the 27th was an exciting day. NextUS 818 Podcast took a road trip to Petersburg, Virginia for the redesignation of the Army base from Fort Lee to Fort Gregg Adams. For the first time in history, U.S. Army bases are being named after women and Black and Hispanic officers instead of only white men. On April 27th, Fort Lee, named for General Robert E. Lee, became Fort Gregg Adams for two Black officers who made significant contributions to the Army. It is one of the 9 renamed bases, part of a congressional and military effort to change Confederate names and honor American heroes. I will share 2 audio clips about the base redesignation. In order to understand the context for base renaming, the first audio clip is an excerpt from a PBS NewsHour interview with PBS newsmen Jeff Bennett, Nick Schifrin, and retired Admiral Michelle Howard, who chaired the renaming commission. In the second audio clip, you will hear the words of Major General Mark T. Simmerly, as he discusses the life and legacy of Lieutenant General Gregg and Lieutenant Colonel Adams.
Until today, the U.S. Army's 3rd largest training site was named for the slave-owning commander of the Confederate Army. Nearly 160 years after Robert E. Lee's surrender, Fort Lee surrendered its namesake traitor to commemorate 2 trailblazers.
I hope that this community will look with pride on the name Fort Gregg Adams, and that the name will instill pride in every soldier entering our mighty gates.
94-year-old Lieutenant General Arthur J. Gregg enlisted in the Army in 1946. He wanted to be a lab technician, but faced racial barriers, so went into logistics. He graduated from Officer Candidate School and retired after 36 years as the military's highest-ranking Black officer. His first assignment at the base that now bears his name, with its whites-only officers' club, which is also now named for him. The base also commemorates the late Lieutenant Colonel Charity Adams, who commanded the first and only unit of mostly Black women officers to serve overseas during World War II. It's all part of an effort to rename 9 bases and hundreds of other military assets whose names celebrate the Confederacy. Among them, Fort Bragg, renamed Fort Liberty. Fort Hood, renamed for Richard Cavazos, the Army's first ever 4-star general of Hispanic descent. And Fort A.P. Hill, renamed for Mary Edwards Walker, a Civil War surgeon who became a prisoner of war and the only woman ever to receive the Medal of Honor. The naming commission was chaired by retired Navy Admiral Michelle Howard, the Navy's first female 4-star and the first Black woman to command a U.S. Navy ship.
Why overall is this renaming important?
After the George Floyd murders, many states started to rethink our vision and the memories of the Civil War. At the federal level, Congress realized that naming an asset, a building or a ship after someone, honors them, commemorates them. And the people who fought for the Confederacy were traitors. They waged war against the United States. So those names should be removed or replaced with names of people who have remained faithful to the United States. Our military bases are important symbols of might and right of the United States. And the names that are on the base signs, the names that are on our ships, should reflect the values of our country and the values of the American people.
You acknowledge in your report that as you and your commissioners did your work, you were criticized for, quote, erasing history. But you write this, you write, history is about who we were. Commemoration is about who we strive to be. What do you mean?
When you name an asset for an individual, you're elevating them. It's someone you want to look up to and remember for their heroic acts or for their example of leadership. History is the retelling of the facts. We're not looking at changing DOD school books, but we are looking to have names now that when a sailor serves on a ship or a soldier serves on a base or an airman serves on a base, they can look up and learn about that person and be inspired to be a better military member.
You acknowledge that many of the bases named for Confederate leaders have far more to do with the culture under which they were named than they have with the historical acts of their namesakes. How so?
After the Civil War, there was not a naming of Confederates. There were no symbols. They were considered traitors by those who had stayed with the U.S. Army and by our government. These installations that we looked at, they were named in World War II. And the idea of the Army, the Department of War at the time, was that we should name bases in the South after Confederate generals and bases in the North after Union generals to help create patriotism. What's obvious in that statement is they are forgetting about all of the Americans who are either African American or other communities, that the naming after Confederate generals is not inspiring. It completely ignored their perspectives.
For years, the Army fought some of these efforts.
Yes.
We went back to 2017 and found a statement that removing the names of Robert E. Lee and Stonewall Jackson from a base in New York would be, quote, controversial and divisive. The debate, I think, still goes on. I don't want to be political, but I'm going to bring up one tweet here. President Trump vetoed the National Defense Authorization Act, in part objecting to a provision that required changes to bases named after Confederate leaders. And he said, these monumental and very powerful bases have become part of a great American heritage. Our history as the greatest nation in the world will not be tempered with. Do you think today the debate is ongoing?
So you start with the veto. I start with the fact that the veto was overturned in a very strong bipartisan manner, that the elected officials of this country understood that this was something that needed to be looked at.
And needed to be reckoned with and fixed.
We've had reckonings over the aftermath of slavery and the Civil War, but I'm not sure we've ever had reconciliation. And in some ways, the work Congress chartered the commission to do starts us down the path of reconciliation.
And yet, regardless of these changes, how large of a challenge is reverence of the Confederacy? Indeed, how large of a challenge is racism continue to be in the U.S. military?
You know, the military is made up of humans, and they are wonderful individuals, but I'll be the first to say we're not saints. And so we carry our own beliefs and prejudice and biases with us.
But some have argued that these issues, whether of reverence of the Confederacy, whether of racism, are actually institutional.
The country's changed quite a bit. Our laws have changed over the years. Our policies have changed over the years. It is remarkable we're having this conversation in the 75th anniversary of Truman's Armed Forces Integration Act, Truman's act that allowed women to now serve on active duty in the military. Our military reflects the change in the law, and our military reflects the changes in the Constitution.
and those changes need to be ongoing.
I don't know if our founding fathers thought of the Constitution as a living, breathing document that would become more encompassing of all of her citizens and expanding the rights to all Americans. But that is what is happening. And so this democracy continues to evolve. But I think the better it evolves, it just continues to make our country greater.
Retired Admiral Michelle Howard, thank you so much.
Thank you, Nick.
Arthur Gray grew up on a South Carolina farm, and at the age of 13, his father sent him to Newport News, Virginia. In 1946, he enlisted in the United States Army. Assigned to a truck company in Germany, Private Gregg quickly earned promotion and became the unit supply sergeant. In 1950, he completed officer candidate school, received a commission in the quartermaster corps, and attended the officer basic course here at Fort Lee. Upon graduation, Second Lieutenant Gregg remained here as an instructor. During this time, he also met, courted, and married the former Charlene McDaniel of Roanoke, Virginia. The Gregg family served assignments at various installations at home and abroad. In 1966, he assumed command of the 96th Supply and Services Battalion at Fort Riley as it was preparing for war. In Vietnam, Gregg's battalion helped expand Cameron Bay into the Army's largest supply depot and a critical part of the theater logistics network. At the same time, Gregg and his team reorganized a broken tactical supply system and dramatically improved its speed and responsiveness. In 1972, the Army promoted him to Brigadier General, making him the first Black quartermaster officer to achieve that rank. As a general officer, Gregg distinguished himself as one of the Army's finest senior logisticians. In 1977, President Carter assigned Gregg as the Director of Logistics for the Joint Staff. He also approved his nomination for appointment to Lieutenant General, making Arthur Gregg the first Black Army officer to achieve three-star rank. In 1979, Lieutenant General Gregg became the Army's first Black officer to serve as a Deputy Chief of Staff for Logistics. In 1981, at a ceremony held just a few hundred yards from here, General Gregg retired after more than 35 years of dedicated service to the Army and the nation. In retirement, he's continued his close support to the Quartermaster Foundation and the Army Logistics branches. In 2016, the Army created the Lieutenant General Arthur J. Gregg Sustainment Leadership Award to recognize outstanding sustainment leaders. General Gregg was appropriately the first recipient. Let me tell you about another legendary Army sustainer. Like Arthur Gregg, Lieutenant Colonel Charity Adams grew up in the segregated South and endured the daily oppression of the Jim Crow laws. She proved an exceptional student, graduating at the age of 15 as class valedictorian and earning a scholarship to Wilberforce University. After college, she returned to Columbia to teach high school science and math. In July of 1942, she and 439 other women arrived at Fort Des Moines, Iowa, to attend the Women's Army Auxiliary Corps' very first officer candidate school. While much of the actual training was integrated, Adams and her Black classmates were segregated into a separate platoon. In August, graduates received their commissions in alphabetical order, making Charity Adams the first Black female officer commissioned. As a newly commissioned officer, Adams commanded Company A, which received, equipped, fed, and housed hundreds of Black women training to become bakers, cooks, clerks, and truck drivers. In December of 1942, Adams and three other Black women were promoted early to the rank of first officer, equivalent to an Army captain. In May of 1943, the Army promoted Adams to major in the newly redesignated Women's Army Corps, or WACS. And in December of 1944, she was selected to lead the first, and as it turned out, the only multiracial battalion of African-American and Hispanic women to serve overseas in war. When it reached Birmingham, England, Adams' unit of nearly 900 women was organized as the 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion, with orders to reduce the European theater's backlog of 3 million letters and packages. Operating out of dark, rat-infested warehouses, including 6 airplane hangars stuffed with Christmas packages, Adams' battalion worked around the clock to redirect mail to waiting soldiers. The Army expected the job to take 6 months, the 6888 completed its mission in 3. In April of 1945, the 6888 relocated to France, where Adams soldiers continued to provide postal support to the theater. When the Red Cross built a separate recreational facility for black soldiers, Adams asked for soldiers to boycott the facility, and they complied. When the Army formed a women's all-American, all-star basketball team and invited several soldiers of the 6888 to play, but rescinded the invitation upon learning they were black. Prior to her departure from the Army in March of 1946, Adams was promoted to Lieutenant Colonel, making her the highest-ranking black woman in the United States Army military, United States military at the time. After her military service, Adams earned her graduate degree and married a young medical student, Stanley Early Jr. They relocated to Dayton, Ohio, where Charity Adams Early became a prominent civil rights activist and educator. She died in 2002, survived by her two children, Stanley Early III and Judith Early. In 2018, the Army established a memorial at Fort Leavenworth, Kansas to honor Adams and the 6888. In 2019, the Army awarded the battalion with a unit citation medal. And in 2022, Congress voted to recognize the battalion with a Congressional Gold Medal. Today, we recognize Arthur Gregg and Charity Adams for their courage, their dignity, and their hope. Despite growing up in a segregated nation, these two pioneers volunteered to serve that nation in uniform. Their service, both in war and peace, demonstrates that courage is not confined or defined by a single race or gender. As a young officer, Charity Adams repeatedly took a stand against the notion of separate but equal facilities for black and white soldiers. And she literally bet her bars when a senior officer patronized her in front of her troops. Offered the chance to lead the first black women's unit to deploy into harm's way, she leaped at the opportunity. During her brief but extraordinary military career, she repeatedly exceeded expectations, and to borrow her own humble words, made it as a WAC officer. As a young lieutenant, Arthur Gregg worked, trained, and taught in integrated units. But he was not welcome to dine at the Fort Lee Officers Club or swim at the Fort Lee pool, while he and his wife lived in segregated quarters on post. Despite these slights, he chose Army life as his career, commanding troops in Vietnam, serving in key logistical positions around the world, and rising to become the first black Army officer promoted to Lieutenant Colonel, or Lieutenant General. In addition to their courage, it's worth noting the dignity with which these two outstanding leaders met and overcame the various challenges in their lives. I mentioned some examples of the racism and sexism they confronted. I should also acknowledge the challenges inherent in every leadership position they held, especially those associated with leading men and women in a combat zone. Arthur Gregg and Charity Adams were exceptional leaders, in no small part because they led with dignity. They looked the part, they maintained their composure, and they led by example. In short, these two epitomize the professional qualities we seek in every leader who wears the uniform for the United States Army. Finally, let me just say a few words about hope, because hope is what I see when I consider the achievements of these two great Americans. By exceeding all expectations, by breaking through visible and invisible barriers, and by doing so with courage and dignity, they offer their fellow Americans hope for a better tomorrow. The Army provided them with a way to serve their nation and build better lives. They seized the opportunity to be all they could be. It's been 81 years since Charity Adams was commissioned as the first black woman in the Women's Auxiliary Army Corps, 76 years since General Gregg enlisted as an Army private. We've come a long way since then, and today's redesignation is yet another example of our nation's and our Army's progress. The next Charity Adams, the next Arthur Gregg are out there right now, leading soldiers with courage and dignity, setting the example for all of us, and inspiring hope in the next generation that is the future of our Army. That future begins right here at Fort Gregg Adams, Virginia, where our motto remains, support starts here.
The second 6888 honor was from the state of Delaware. On May 2nd, the Delaware General Assembly passed a resolution honoring the 6888 Battalion in recognition of their service and receipt of the Congressional Gold Medal in 2022. The resolution, known as HB 39, was co-sponsored by Delaware State Representative Kendra Johnson and State Senator Marie Pinckney. Four members of the 6888 Battalion were from Delaware. Corporal Grace Evelyn Bryant, Corporal Edith Marguerite Carter, Private Mary Crawford Raglan, who is interred at Arlington National Cemetery, and Private Evelina Rachel Griffin. It was a real pleasure to accompany several other 6888 descendants for the passage of the resolution. The impact of the service of the 6888 can be captured in this email from a Delaware resident who heard about the resolution, and I quote, "Please convey to those, to all those who were caused in drafting, sponsoring, co-sponsoring, and affirming this resolution, that this resolution does make a difference. I find the acknowledgement and gratitude it expresses makes a real difference to what we know about and how we live and acknowledge the world those who marched before us have provided as our legacy. My own dad was killed in action while on reconnaissance as General Patton drove our forces into Germany in 1945. I have the letters Dad wrote home to Mom during his deployment, as well as those sent from her that were returned following his death. I feel the valiant effort of the 6888 must have had an impact on expediting the mail to and from Dad. His letters to Mom confirmed the importance her mail had to him, and the power of those communications lives on. Through his letters, I found a bond with Dad I could never have achieved otherwise, as I was only 19 months old when he died. Thank you, 6888, and all those who embrace the memories of the heroic actions." It's such a touching response from one of the Delaware constituents. And we thank you for taking the time to share this with us. The third honor within the same week was from the state of Maryland. On May 3rd, Governor Wes Moore signed a bill to officially proclaim March 9th as the 6888 Central Postal Directory Battalion Day. 19 members of the 6888 Battalion were from the state of Maryland. So as we wrap up, let me acknowledge that it was an incredible week in 6888 history. I'm honored to be able to share all this good news. Thank you for listening to Nexus 818 podcast. I hope you enjoyed our show. If you have questions or topics you'd like us to discuss, or you'd like to be a guest on the show, please email the show at nexus818podcast@gmail.com. I like to end each show with a favorite reflection. Tonight, I'll share two quotes about leadership and vision. The first quote is from Ralph Lauren. "A leader has the vision and conviction that a dream can be achieved. He or she inspires the power and energy to get it done." The second quote is from David Gergen. "A leader's role is to raise people's aspirations for what they can become and to release their energies so that they will try to get there." See you for our next show on Wednesday, June 7th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. You can catch the show on New York City Podcast Network, Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Google Podcasts, and Spotify for podcasters.